This is Mike Wilbon from ESPN's Pardon the Interruption, and I'm speaking with Chad and Ryan on the Friendly Confines podcast.
Rhino 2015 and 2016 called, and Jake Arrieta is back. You think it's going to be the same guy, or do you think, what do you think? Any gas left in that tank?
Man, I hope so, Chad, because couldn't we use 2015 Jake Arrieta? Can we turn back the hands of time just for one season on this one-year deal? I know that the fans are excited, Chad, but as you said, is it going to be the Jake that we saw once upon a time, or is this a new Jake that we're just hoping can maybe every now and then have a flash of greatness?
So much to talk about. We're going to break down how the rest of the rotation sets up. We're going to talk about some new news around the Cubs' schedule at Wrigley Field, and also some capacity news for spring training. We're going to talk about that and what that's going to look like, plus some projections for how the number crunchers think the Cubs are going to finish here in this upcoming campaign.
Absolutely. And of course, we have part two of our interview with Michael Wilbon from ESPN's Pardon the Interruption. So stick around, because the Friendly Confines starts right now. Hey guys, it's Sylvie from Waddle and Sylvie on ESPN 1000. You're listening to my guys, Chad and Ryan, on the Friendly Confines. Hi, everybody. He's Chad Gordon. I'm Ryan Lieber. Let's start as we always do, Chad, and that being in the first inning, and the Cubs making some major news over the weekend. And of course, bringing back a familiar face. It's someone you and I had spoken about in previous episodes about the potential possibility of this player coming back. And he is officially coming back. Former Cy Young Award winner Jake Arrieta is now going to be part of the Chicago Cubs, signing a one-year, $6 million deal to bring him back to the North Side after playing the last three in Philadelphia. Chad, just initial thoughts on bringing Jake back into the fray and back into the Cubs organization.
Here's what I love about it. Swagger, energy, focus, intensity. I mean, that's what Jake's going to bring. Does he have anything left in the tank in terms of the ability to dominate? I'm not really sure. You know, his fastball's down a few miles an hour. You know, he's not the same pitcher. But then again, nobody is the same pitcher he showed us for a very glorious time in 15 and 16. And so, you know, it's going to sell some jerseys. It's different, right? It's a different energy than John Lester, a different intensity, which I'm excited about. Where does he fit in with the lineup? You know, will he slot in? Will he be the second most valuable? Will he be a third most valuable pitcher? I'm not really sure. But I'm excited that he has the opportunity to come back and prove something to a fan base that absolutely idolizes him.
Yeah. And, you know, listen, on the surface, it's gotten a lot of people excited. As you just said, you know, he's somebody that is a fan favorite. People love him. He meant so much to this organization from 2014 to 2017, and, you know, provided so much for this franchise to get to a world championship, and certainly was the most dominant pitcher in baseball in 2015. Does he have anything left in the tank? As you said, I mean, the last three seasons have not gone very well for him. He has not been able to stay healthy, but we all know something about Jake is that he's a great presence in the locker room. He's somebody who is certainly going to come to camp in shape. And if he can stay healthy, he's certainly going to give the Cubs a different look as far as what they're going to show from a rotation standpoint. So if nothing else, from what has been a dismal offseason, it certainly is giving the Cub fans like you and I at least something to get a little bit excited about as we enter the 2021 season.
Absolutely. And Jake, the last Cubs pitcher to win a postseason game. So hopefully we can bring some of that magic back. Let's move on to the second inning. So I touch on it for just a second, Rhino. What do you think, or how do you think the rotation is going to play out? Where do you think the chips will fall?
Yeah, you know, it's interesting, Chad. Like, I was thinking a lot about this because now we have about six, seven, maybe eight guys that are vying for a spot in the rotation. So if I had to look at this and go through the five-man rotation really quick, right? We all can agree that Hendricks is going to be number one. But who's going to be number two? I don't think it's out of the realm of possibility, Chad. that Jake could slot into that number two spot and be that guy who's going to look a little different from a guy who's not throwing off speed pitches. Three, I think we're looking at Zach Davies. Four, we're looking at Alec Mills. And then five or six, remember, we're going to be seeing a six-man rotation. You're looking at an Albert Azalea or, like a Terrence Williams, who's going to be able to come in and potentially get that sixth spot. So that's how I think it's going to look ultimately when we are going to start the year. What about you?
It's interesting because, you know, Mills has the no hitter behind him. And you would think that that would give him the leg up that, you know, he's shown that he can do it, but you know, he was proving himself in this last year. So, you know, it's Adbert, your guy is Williams. I think Davies is probably going to slot in. It's number two from my perspective, but I think, you know, we may be surprised with who actually emerges because there have been some young arms that have been coming on. But right now, if I was a betting man, I would think it would be Hendricks, Davies, Arrieta, and then probably Alzolay and Williams. I'm not sure if Mills makes the cut, but I can see him being somebody they're going to rely on heavily in this coming year.
And I apologize. I said Terrence Williams. Trevor Williams is who I meant. But yes, to possibly see him as the guy that comes in. All right, so let us move on now to the third inning, Chad. And this is good news for someone like yourself. The Cubs announced that when spring training opens, they're going to allow 25% capacity in the seats. So I'm assuming that's a little over 1,500 fans, give or take. You know the capacity better than I do. So what do you make of this potential of fans being back watching spring training games and someone like yourself who has season tickets? I know you deferred them, but knowing maybe for the future or for people that are going to go to the games, what does that mean for people like that?
It actually works out to about 35 to 4,200 fans at a game because the capacity there is 15,000-16,000. It's actually a good size stadium. And always breaks records for attendance each and every year. They somehow find ways to squeeze people in. But you know, not only did I defer the Sloan Park and the Mesa Cubs, they actually decided to have everybody defer, and so they refunded everybody, even the ones that wanted to stay opted in. I have my chance this week to do pre-sale tickets, so I'm going to be interested to see how many I can buy of how many games. I think it's going to be a hot ticket. And people are going to want to watch baseball. I certainly am going to want to spend a few days down there and see as many games as I can. So, you know, I think 25% is right. I'm going to be really excited as more and more people get vaccinated and we might be able to see more as the year goes on. I mean, the real question marks what's going to happen at Wrigley Field. But yeah, I won't have a concern being there. I'm going to do what I've always done, which is I'm going to avoid the crowds and not be around a lot of people, wear the mask, do the things that I need to do to just do my part to be safe. But yeah, I will be the first one in line. The pre-sale for the season ticket holders is this coming week, and I'll be right on board. Would you go, Ryan? Is that something that you would you'd be interested? You're there in Florida. You have the ability to go see some games up and down the coast.
Yeah, and you know, and I want to correct myself. You were absolutely right. 15,000 person capacity. You're looking at about 3,500 people. So that's a nice crowd. I would feel better, Chad, once I get the vaccine. And yeah. I'm happy to say that I've gotten one of the shots so far. I'm hoping to get the second one soon. So if I did have both shots and then went to the games responsibly, as you said, wearing a mask, being socially distant, because just because you have the vaccine, that still is not, you know, 100% immunity. I would go to the games. I absolutely would. I would go to the game and, you know, wear the mask and, you know, try to enjoy myself as much as possible. I would like to try to get back to normalcy as much as I could. And if it allows me to do that once, you know, you're vaccinated, 100%, I would do that. But I think this is great. It at least signals to some degree, I understand it's at the end of the day trying to make money, but at least it signals people or the, you know, the world that we live in trying to get back to a place that we are familiar with and being familiar with being at ball games, seeing fans at ball games and having that, you know, normalcy, I think is just only going to make things a better situation as we head into the year.
Absolutely. You know, Ryan, I'm so excited. We've got three more innings left until we have Michael Wilbon, ESPN, Part of the Interruption, Part 2. Let's get moving. Fourth inning now. So the regular season schedule is out. They actually set the times. And interesting, the Cubs, maybe this is something, maybe a little mea culpa for the city. We always fight how many night games there are. The Cubs actually are leaning heavily on more day games. What do you make of that?
Yeah, so it's interesting. There's going to be 47 home games, Chad. First pitch, which is scheduled for 1:20 Chicago time, which would be pretty cool. And that is also going to be opening day when the Cubs and the Pirates square off at Wrigley. And, you know, certainly that's always been a prominent time, but I like it. I think it's great. And it could also mean that more national broadcasts are going to get picked up too, because the Cubs are going to be one of the few teams playing weekday day games. And so I think there's maybe more of an opportunity where we can see the Cubs on national television, whether that be on MLB Network or ESPN. You know, listen, I've always been a fan of the day games. Obviously, night games are great at Wrigley too. But when you think of Cubs baseball, day games are, you know, certainly the norm. So if this is an opportunity to give the Cubs more chances to be on TV, to play those day games, to, you know, also maybe have a little bit more opportunities to, you know, get themselves out there to play games at a pace that's going to allow them to, you know, I don't know. I mean, just at least enjoy and feel like they're back in the swing of things. I'm all for it, because last year in just the shortened season, we saw a lot more night games. So maybe this is just bringing that back to a little bit more regularity. What do you think on that?
You know, I've said this before. If you're a friend of mine and we've talked about the Cubs, you've heard me say this exact statement. If there is a heaven, if there is, for me, it's a series of Friday afternoon games with just a rotating collection of friends sitting beside me in my season tickets. That is my favorite thing in the world. All those Fridays where when I, you know, I lived in my place in Lakeview where, you know, I kept looking at the clock and I knew, got to get all my work done by noon. And then once between noon and 12:30 happens, I'd start booking it over to Wrigley and meeting up with a friend and seeing a game. So I love it. I love that. That there are day games. I can't wait to be at the park for some day games. I have my flights booked. I booked them months ago, flying in on March 31st. My hope is to be there. I don't have any expectation that I will be the lucky one that will be able to be there on opening day if they do allow crowds. But, you know, for me, day games, night games, I just want Pat Hughes in my ear if I'm not able to be there at Wrigley Field. I'm very, very much looking forward to it.
All right. So let us move on now to the fifth inning here, Chad. And of course, we always look forward to when the Pecota numbers come out before the season starts. And if you are unfamiliar with what that is, of course, it is a program that projects the wins for every team going into the season. And the Cubs were projected for 85 wins, which was good for second place in the NL Central. So just to talk about who was where, Brewers projected with 89, Cubs 85, Cardinals 81, Reds 79, Pirates 61. So, Chad, what do you think of the projections, A, for the Cubs, and B, for how the rest of the NL Central shakes out?
It's so interesting because obviously they're expecting a huge bounce back year for Yelich. I mean, that's obviously why they're projecting the Brewers to be there. But, I mean, did they make these projections before the Arenado trade? For the Cardinals, I feel like it came out after that. So it's very bewildering to me. And you know, I can take these projections, you know, as like I don't really put a lot into it, but it's basically the number crunchers. It's the nerds, the analytics that they look at all the different stats and they say, this is what should historically happen if we look into the future. And they've been pretty good sometimes. And they've been dead on with the Cubs sometimes as well, even to the point where, you know, they had the Cubs underperforming in 19. And you remember the Cubs had to collapse in 19 to pretty much finish very, very much where Pecota thought they would. So, you know, I think it's interesting. I do think it's going to be a close race. And there's going to be a lot of competition. You have the Cardinals going all the way. You think the division's already done. For me, it's obviously they have a lot of weight on Brewers pitching. Which has shown its strength, and Christian Yelich regaining his MVP form. What do you think?
Listen, I'd be ecstatic if the Cubs won 85 games this year. I don't think that number is crazy off. I think 82 to 85 is probably about right for this Cubs team. The Brewers, you know, listen, like you said, I guess they're looking to see if Yelich is going to, you know, just blow up and potentially win the Triple Crown this year. The Cardinals, absolutely, I'm shocked about, just at 81 wins. I mean, I think the Cardinals are the best team in the NL Central this year. They have solid pitching. They have the, you know, the offense. Adding Arenado, I think, is going to be huge. And then you put Goldschmidt in the lineup, obviously, with them. This is a really good baseball team. But here's the one thing I'll say about the NL Central, and I think we can both agree on this. Other than the Pirates, I think any team is up for grabs to potentially win. Like, it wouldn't shock me. Do I think the Cardinals are the hands-on favorite? Absolutely. But would it shock me if the Reds ended up winning the division? No, probably not, because it is a dreadful division to begin with. And the Cubs offense and the Cardinals offense is, you know, you put them side by side. I mean, again, and this is if the Cubs come to play, I think their offense is just as good as the Cardinals is.
Yeah.
It's just a matter of, is the Cubs offense going to show up? So, you know, I don't necessarily agree the Brewers are the team to beat. I do think it's still the Cardinals, but I'm overall, I think 85 wins for the Cubs. I think that's a generous gift. And I totally think that's a decent goal for this team to get to. And listen, 85 wins at the end of the day, Chad, might end up winning the division.
Yeah. And I didn't throw my projections out there, so I'll just really briefly say, I actually think the 85 is low. I, you know, so many Cubs players are in contract years. Pitching is going to have a huge role. I think 88 to 89 is where the Cubs are going to finish. But again, I'm always stupidly optimistic, especially this time of year. Let's move on to the sixth inning. And I love that you put this in as an inning topic, because it is pretty timely now, where Mark Cuban, one of the NBA owners, the owner of the Dallas Mavericks, just wasn't playing the national anthem before his games. And then the NBA basically said, nope, you're going to do that. You're going to play it. But you posed the question, do we still need to play the anthem before sporting events? I'll let you take the first crack at this.
You know, it's a tradition, and I understand where people come in and they say, well, why don't you do it before you go to work, or why don't you do it when you go to a restaurant or a movie theater? You know, listen, there's certain traditions that are just in play when you go to sporting events, and this is one of them, and I have no problem with it. Like, I enjoy it, and it gets you into the spirit of the game, and there is nothing more Americana than going to a major sporting event, whether it's baseball or football or basketball, whatever the case may be. And what's more America than baseball? So as far as my opinion goes, for what it's worth, I like having the national anthem being sung before a game. It gets me excited. It brings me closer to the game. And you know what? There's nothing better when you hear a beautiful singer, like a Wayne Mesmer, for that matter, to sing the national anthem before a game to get you really jacked up. So I really hope that this is an anomaly, and I hope that we continue to play it, because for me, it's important. It's not just about symbolism of our country. It's just a tradition of what we do when we go to sporting events. And for that matter, there is nothing wrong with that.
Yeah, you know where I'm going to fall on this. I mean, you know, and the listeners as well, if they heard my interview with Wayne Mesmer. I mean, I love it. It's very special. What I will share with you is I appreciate the fact that it's different for baseball. Now, on opening day, you've got all the lineups out there and everybody's standing at attention down the foul lines, and everybody's out there. And they're there for the pomp and circumstance. They do the same thing in the playoffs as well. But on regular games, you've got guys stepping up from the bullpen and standing at attention. You have people in the clubhouse. You have people in the batting cages getting extra to swings in. And so it's not as formal, you know, I mean, that's where we get into this whole thing about, like, you know, the whole aspect of kneeling and social, you know, making a stand during this moment in time. Baseball wasn't always everybody stand at attention. And for, and I guess the thing that, you know, it's diving into this topic, because this is what I was really thinking about when I thought about this inning, you know, for the people that say, oh, it's, you know, it's sacrilegious, you know, where you're, it's an insult to America if you do anything but stand to attention. I just, you know, I've been in the concourse so many times where people are fumbling with their hot dog or their beer. They're acting like they're not hearing the national anthem when they're trying to get a one more drink order in, you know, before. And so, I would hope everybody that is taking a stance on the national anthem, they stand up from their laser boom and they're watching the game at home when Wayne's singing and they're standing at attention and put their hand over their heart, because I don't think people are doing that. But yeah, it needs to go on. It needs to continue. Just like the seventh inning stretch at Wrigley Field, it is a part of baseball, and there's nothing more exciting than the exhilaration, especially on those special days when they've got, like, the flyovers and the other things where, you know, the whole stadium is just pridefully excited about America and what it stands for, because at times it can be pretty special.
The boys will be right back with part two of their interview with Michael Wilbon. But first, a quick word from Federalist Wines.
Chad, the new baseball season is finally here, and I, for one, can't wait for the game to get started once again. You know, it gets us closer to the summer, so let's pour a glass of something tasty and toast that new baseball season.
That's right, and why not pour some delicious Federalist wine? It's the perfect wine to have with any meal or just enjoy on its own.
Yep, but you can pair it also with a steak, burger, and fries. It doesn't matter, because the Federalist wine is an American wine crafted for the only tasting note that matters, and that's a damn good taste.
It's a bold choice with baseball or any sport, and you can pair it with any food you desire. If you go to uncork.com and use the code CUBS20, you can get 20% off your purchase.
This is Federalist wine. This is an American craft wine, so go to uncork.com, use the promo code CUBS20, and get 20% off your purchase. Must be 21 years or older to consume alcohol. Please drink responsibly.
With February being Black History Month and, you know, certain steps that you were talking about need to be taken by Major League Baseball. In your opinion, though, what has Major League Baseball done that you feel like has been good? I point to maybe like the Negro Leagues and how they have been so amazing about recognizing the league now even more so and including them in the statistics. And then what are still things, and you kind of touched on it in your last answer, maybe a little more about what they still need to do to bring in more African-American players into the league or to introduce the sport to more kids who would love the sport for that matter.
Yeah, a great question. And part of that, they made a great hire with Ken Griffey Jr. And there's so many other people who have helped in this effort. But 25 and 30 years ago, they were fighting against, like a hurricane, because it just wasn't a sort of real concern. And there has been real concern. There's one thing you just mentioned. It's both. I can use it as the one example, both sides of the coin. I mean, Major League Baseball should have done what it did with the Negro League statistics 20, 30 years ago. And I can't believe it wouldn't have been suggested. I mean, there were people who have been in Major League Baseball front offices, like Jimmy Lee Solomon, who isn't anymore, but who was one of the great human resources, in my way of thinking. And there are a handful of people like that who, you know, their minds needed to be mined for ideas, and some of these things should have been implemented. And so Major League Baseball did it, which is a good thing. It did it decades late, which is a bad thing. I'm glad they did it. I don't believe that, you know, it's too late to do it. It's late, but it's not too late. We could go through things like that. But I think the way the game is played is what bothers me as much as what we just talked about. And this whole notion of me being angry about put the ball in play instead of every single hitter trying to launch a home run. I mean, that's not – the entire Cobb wouldn't have existed. Mm-hmm. And the whole first baseball history would start with, like, Ruth's sixth season. Right? I mean, so yep. All these other – so and what's more exciting than people on base, than men on base? Trying to figure out what to do. You know, I used to sit with my son when he was playing and starting to play. And I do it now, too, if we're at a game. And we go to lots of postseason baseball. First in Chicago to see the Cubs. You know, he came to see the Cleveland games. We've gone to Washington games every year, including – I don't know if he was at the game. No, they get clinched on the road. But we sit when there are people on base, and I go, okay, where's the cutoff going to? You know, what do you do if you're the pitcher? Are you looking him back? Are you throwing over? What happens – with first and third, and does the catcher throw through the second base to stop a guy trying to steal with less than two out? What do you do here? And you don't have any of that if guys are just trying to launch, and launch angle is all that matters.
Yep.
And it doesn't make the game better. It's crap to say that makes the game better. It may make it more marketable for a few people, but was the game not marketable, even though they weren't marketing geniuses? To see Minnie Minoso on the base pass, to see Jackie Robinson on the base pass, Hell, let's modernize it somewhat to see Ricky Henderson on the base path. This wasn't Pete Rose. This wasn't exciting. And so I find myself withdrawing from conversation because I get so angry with people who don't believe what I believe, or who don't at least entertain the notion that today's baseball isn't the only form. In fact, it's an inferior form of entertainment. Inferior. If I got to see a three hour and 50 minute National League game where there were eight pitchers used on one team, that's an inferior entertainment product.
Yeah.
If you're looking for a Cubs podcast, I will promise you that none of our innings ever deal with analytics ever, because it's not in our world. So if I may, I know we're coming up on our time. I'd like to ask you the question, put on your Cubs hat as a fan. What are you feeling right now? This has been an unremarkable off season, I think, to say the least. Yep. It's been an eye-opening off season with some of the cost-cutting measures. How are you feeling about this team? Are you feeling like they're throwing in the towel for the rebuild now, or do you feel like there's glimmers of hope because the offense and the lineup on the field still largely is a lot of big names, but they sure don't have anybody on the mound right now. So how are you feeling?
This is a year. I'm taking a deep breath and just saying, okay, I've been on pins and needles for since 15. So 15, 16, 17, 18, 19, and even 20 because I got off to a good start. So six seasons I'm on pins and needles. I am making my wife crazy because I've got the television is always inches from me on a phone now. I mean, 15, 16, 17, I don't care where we were at dinner. We could have been at the White House. And I was going to snatch out a phone, which would have angered President number 44, he's a White Sox fan, Barack Obama. And I had to take a lot of grief for that. We went back and forth. And I had communication with him recently, and I said, I'm going to root for the White Sox this summer. Because they're going after something. We're not going after it. Look, I'm never going to be anything but Cubs first. And pitching can emerge. I mean, look, we had proven entities on the mound for the last since 15, and we got one. And that's the disappointment for me is that we didn't get a second one or get to a second one. Not that, you know, I hate seeing Theo Lee. That may be the biggest disappointment. But we didn't get close enough to the second one. And so now I'm just taking a breath. I'm like, okay, I'm shutting it down. If they can shut it down, I can shut it down. Yeah. So I'm going to sort of shut it down. I'm going to watch games and be much more leisurely about it the way I was the previous, 57 years of my life. I'm going to, whenever we can go back to the ballpark, I will go sit in my usual, area of seating, preferred area. But I'm not going to check every inning every day like I did for those years. I'm not going to be on pins and needles. I'm not going to be nuts. And I'm going to watch more White Sox games. I'm going to watch more White Sox games. Kenny Williams is a dear friend. I am. I'm going to, so is Doc Rivers, all these White Sox guys now I got to deal with, but I'm not going to fight it. I'm going to root for them. I told Doc Rivers that the other day, and he said he's going to faint dead away. Doc Rivers is another guy who, dyed-in-the-wool White Sox fan. I'm sure you guys know that.
Yeah.
And I've been taking grief for them for years. And I said, I'm not even going to give you guys grief back. I'm going to, because you know what? I grew up there. I grew up on the South Side. I grew up going to that, to 35th and Shields. I don't know what it's called now. To Comiskey Park. I'm never going to call it whatever that guaranteed loan. I'm never calling it that. And I don't know if I can go there this summer. I don't know if that'll be allowed, but I'm going to quietly polite golf clap route for the White Sox this summer. And, if the Cubs start to overperform, then I will be out of my mind again. I'll go back on everything I just said and be an obnoxious fool, for as long as the Cubs stay connected with the other teams in the division.
It's so funny you say that, Mike, because Chad and I have debates back and forth. I kind of am like that, saying, hey, is it okay if I cheer for the White Sox a little bit this year, knowing what we've seen from the North Side? So I'm on your side on that. I just want the record to show, Mike. I'm with you on that one.
Hey, well, you know what it is? I mean, White Sox fans, look, I can say this because I'm a Southsider. There ain't a whole lot of gracious behavior going on from the South Side to the North when it comes to ball teams. Okay, I can say that because I'm on the side of the offending party. But I'm not paying them any attention. I'm gonna take the high road, and I am. Every day I'm gonna start off. Whenever the season starts, I'm gonna start off looking at White Sox games. Yeah. I am. I'm excited to sort of see what they put together. I don't know that it's enough. You know, sometimes I look at the makeup of the team, and I wonder, you know, whether that will work. You look at any team and wonder that. You don't ever know that the makeup is going to be good. The guys are going to love each other so much or have the kind of chemistry that will work. So I'm hoping that works. And, I'm not, you know, when the Cubs and White Sox, I mean, when the White Sox and the Astros were playing in the World Series in 2005, my co-host, my dear friend and co-host, Tony Kornheiser, asked me on the show, he said, before the White Sox clinched that night, he said, are you going to root for the other team? I said, Tony, the other team is always one not wearing Chicago on its chest. You think I'm going to root for a team that says Houston over a team that says Chicago? That would make you a fool. Yeah. And that's always the case for me. If the White Sox play late into the summer, I usually go. I also have a great relationship with the front office and particularly Jerry Reinsdorf, who has been so gracious to invite me out to take part in things, in a charitable event and community event, and I try to say yes to every one of them, and I will go happily and even stay for a game. And I'm not saying I'm going to put on a jersey. If I do, it's got to be either Louis Aparicio or Minnie Minoso. That's as far as I can go. I'm not saying I'm going to do that, but I'm not going to rule it out.
Hey, Mike, we'll leave it with that. I mean, listen, we could obviously talk to you for another 3 hours, but we know you're up against getting ready for your show. But somebody who's a friend of our show now, who we've had the honor also of bringing on, is George Will. We had Mr. Will join us on an episode, and I'm curious, is your cohort at the that was a thrill too, and he's your cohort at the Post. I'm curious if you guys, how often, if at all, you guys interact and talk Cubs baseball when you guys are at the paper together.
Well, but his office was elsewhere. Mine was on the fifth floor with everybody else. And I'll tell you a quick story. So there were a couple of times George sent me notes, just a little handwritten note on stationery saying, I love that. It's been about baseball, I think, each time. And it happened 3 or 4 years and years ago when I was covering baseball, which I really don't do anymore. But I'll tell you this. So the first postseason game the Cubs had played in my lifetime. So this is September of 1984 against the San Diego Padres. I sat in Wrigley Field in the auxiliary press box, and I'm sure this was done purposely by somebody who was older and knew all of our histories and the history of what we'd written and what we believed in and what moved us. I was seated next to George Will for the first two games, opening two games of that series, which the Cubs, of course, won both games. With Rick Sutcliffe pitching game one, I think game one was 13-0. Yeah.
Yep.
And I sat next to George Will. And it's one of the great highlights, professionally speaking, of my life, to sit next to George Will at Wrigley Field in October, leaves having already turned gold and rust and red and whatever else they were. It was the lifetime. And he won't remember. He probably didn't know who I was. So that I was 25 years old the day that game that day was played. Yes, I've been working for the Washington Post for 4 years, and I've been a sports writer for all four of those years. I would bet against George Will knowing who I was. It was a thrill for me. I've read George Will my whole life, and even though we are largely on opposite sides of the political aisle, I love his writing. Went to school literally on his writing, and just the way he wrote columns, and I wanted to be a columnist. And there are people who I read in Chicago every day, like George Will, like Mike Royko, like the guys in sports, but Royko and Bob Verdi and all the great columnists of the time, Bob Green, that I was growing up there, that I read and sort of stole and incorporated things from them. And so George Will is one of those people. And I don't know that I ever sat next to him at a sporting event again, but I sat next to him in those two games.
And once again, our thanks to Michael Wilbon in part two of our interview with him. And Chad, such a thrill. You can find Mike on Twitter at Real Mike Wilbon. You can find Chad and I on Twitter as well. We don't have as many followers, but Chad is at the Chad Gordon. I am at Ryan D. Lieber. And of course, don't forget about our Facebook page, the Chicago Cubs Friendly Confines Facebook page. We would love to interact with you. So certainly be sure to check us out and join the group. We would love to hear from you as we move on to the eighth inning.
What a fun interview. We love that we broke that out into two parts. I had so many friends, listeners, that said that was one of my absolute favorite ones. So excited for them to get their reaction on part two, because, you know, Wilbon just had so much great things to share. So let's move on to the eighth inning. And
can I just say something really quick, Chad? I really want to just get this in there. Michael, the great thing about Michael, and then I don't mean to take this away, but the great thing about Michael, we know he's a diehard Cubs fan and he knows so much about the Cubs, but he knows so much about everything, and not just sports. I mean, he could go on any podcast, any sports radio station, any television station, and literally, I think, talk about any franchise to at least a intelligent degree about anything, or politics, or whatever it may be. So it was such a thrill, because, like you said, you hang on every word he says. He really is incredible. So I'm glad that everybody really enjoyed the interview. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No, I love it. And I love that we now have two of the stars of the Washington Post this year, with George Will last season and then Michael Wilbon. I'm just bummed we couldn't get Woodward and Bernstein. You know,
yeah,
before
they're coming up next. We'll get them.
I think one of them passed away, though. I have to get Peyton to fact check that. I think Bernstein passed away. But anyway, let's move on to the eighth inning. And goodness, Clayton Kershaw put the Cubs on blast, ripping into Cubs leadership, ownership rather, on them dealing away Yu Darvish for a bevy of not really well-known prospects. I can't say I disagree with the thought, but what do you think about that? Is Clayton getting a little salty about the Cubs?
Yeah, I mean, listen, you know, at the end of the day, I mean, you know, Clayton Kershaw's got to do what Clayton Kershaw's got to do, right? He's there defending the player, because what he feels is that if he sees more teams trading away talent or, you know, dropping salary, that there's not going to be that competitive edge for players to get the kind of contracts that they want or need. So I understand what he's doing, and it's just posturing to the players to make sure they get their money. And I totally understand that. But at the end of the day, listen, the Cubs have decisions they have to make, even though they may not be popular, even though they're decisions that you and I may not like. They're a business. And while it's frustrating sometimes as a business to do that, they're more concerned with bottom line, whereas Clayton Kershaw's got to protect the player's best interest. So I understand where he's coming from. But, you know, I think it's more about making sure his fellow player is getting the type of money that they deserve, more so than it is about competitive balance in Major League Baseball. At least that was my takeaway. What do you think?
You know, it's representing the players and the Players Association. And I get it. It makes a lot of sense. It's not a good look for baseball for a number three market club to cut payroll. And that's really what this was. This was an effort to cut payroll. And now the front office and Jed would basically say, hey, now we've loaded up. We've got some potential superstars in the mix. And we don't know. We don't know for years if any of these guys are going to be superstars. But what they did do is they punted on Yu Darvish after a year where arguably he could have won the Cy Young if he had a little bit of a stronger finish. And look at, you know, what Trevor Bauer, you know, the value he has. So, you know, really Yu Darvish's contract would be a bargain compared to what Bauer just signed to join Clayton for the Dodgers. So I get it. I think you're going to see more of this, especially as the owners and the players continue on with their negotiations. I don't think they're negotiating right now, but as they move towards what could be a potential stoppage, work stoppage here after this coming season. And I think you're going to see more outspoken players talk about this. This is not good for baseball. And the fact that the Cubs can't, you know, not only try to compete and win now, but also find ways to reload as well. I just think that's a miss by the front office, and I'm hoping I'm wrong. Hoping they see something or know something about Yu Darvish, and there's gonna, you know, they think there's gonna be some sort of regression, and they're selling high. That's what the hope is, and maybe there's some star in this prospect mix.
Yeah, or at the end of the day, you just gotta sell high on a guy, especially if this team wasn't good enough to win a World Series. Why be stuck in that neutral mode? So we'll have to see. By the way, I also have good news for you. Both Woodward and Bernstein, both very healthy and alive.
Ah, so, sorry, I killed off Carl. Sorry about that, Carl. I apologize.
They're
well, you know what? Hey, hold on. Let's get him.
All right. All right, let's see. We'll try to see if we can figure that out and try to get them on. We'll continue our lineage of Washington Post reporters to see if they'll come on our show. So let's finish off here, Chad, as we finish with the ninth inning. So we started at the top with Jake Arrieta. We'll finish the show with Jake Arrieta. Certainly his 2015 season was one for the record books when you look at what he posted and what he did and what he was able to do for this Cubs franchise. So you think of all the great pitchers that the Cubs have had in the over 100 years of this franchise. And it begs the question, did Jake Arrieta have the greatest pitching season ever? And you got to think back here. Did he have the greatest pitching season ever for a Chicago Cub? Where do you stand on that?
Ryan, I mean, if you don't go from game one to game 162, but you actually look from a 1 year period, he had one of the greatest runs as a pitcher in the history of all of Major League Baseball. And we're talking 150 some years or 150 years, I think. He had a sub one ERA over a 29 start stretch that went from June 21st in 2015 to May 20th, 2016. I know that's not a full calendar year, but he was 24-1. He had two no-hitters during that span. His only loss came in 15 in the middle of July or the end of July when the Cubs were no-hit by Cole Hamels. That's the only time he ever lost. So he could have went 30-0 if it wasn't for the no-hitter. That is arguably the greatest stretch by any pitcher in the history of baseball. And it was incredible. I put that famous tweet when the Cubs brought him back in on the Cubs Friendly Confines Facebook page where, you know, the night before the Pirates, you know, wild card game where the Cubs made that improbable run to get to 98 wins to take on the 99-win Pirates in that one game wild card play in. And Jake, you know, to summarize, basically says, you know, whatever you guys have to think, but just know it doesn't matter. In other words, I'm going to win this thing and there's nothing you can do about it. The cockiness, the swagger, the confidence was not off-putting because he absolutely earned it. And it was one of the most incredible runs. I was lucky enough, you know that, I was lucky enough to see his first no-hitter in LA at Dodger Stadium on a whim, was up there and was able to see that. And it just watching him, it's just, you felt unbeatable. You felt like, okay, the offense is going to score at some point because the pitching is going to back you up. It was just a special time that he was such a special talent. I'm not sure we'll ever see it again.
It was an incredible year, but I'm going to argue that this was the greatest season ever in Cubs history with a couple of different suggestions. And this is obviously all conjecture and opinion, but I'm going to take us back to 1909, Chad. Three Finger Mordecai Brown went 27-9 in 1909 with a 1.31 ERA. In 50 games, he started 34 games, completed 32, finished, and he struck out 172 and walked 53 in 342 and 2/3 innings. I mean, hello? How is that even a thing? Now, again, I understand this is a completely different era and a completely different ball game.
A different sport back then.
But if we're talking about greatest of all time, and I did span it, the entire franchise, I'm going to go with that one. Now, I'm going to bring this into the fray as well. Fergie Jenkins' season in 1971.
Oh, yeah.
He went 24-13. He had a higher ERA, a 2.77 ERA, literally a run higher than Jake did in 2015. But he struck out 263 batters, Chad. He walked 37 batters in 325
incredible.
Innings,
yeah,
and he completed 30 games in 39 starts.
Yeah.
So, I mean, to me, and in the middle of a streak of six straight 20-win campaigns that he had at that point. So that specific season, though, I'm going to go Brown 1, Fergie 2, and then I'm going to go Jake 3. And I'm taking nothing away from Jake because I understand the game is so much different.
Yeah.
But I'm the type of guy who I miss the complete game. I miss pitchers throwing 300-plus innings. I mean, we haven't seen that since 1980, believe it or not. And I miss seeing how pitchers finished what they started. I'm taking nothing away from Jake Arrieta. He had probably one of the greatest seasons I've ever seen. But if you're talking about over the course of this franchise, I'm going to put Three Finger Brown and Fergie's ahead of Jake Arrieta.
Listen, no debate here. Mordecai, amazing. It was a completely different sport back then. You know, they're not throwing 98-mile-an-hour pissers, you know, and doing the things they do. And it's just different ball, different equipment, different everything. But I do love Fergie. I think, I mean, just, you know, we're still trying so hard to get him on the show. And we've talked to him a couple times. But yeah, that season, absolutely. I'll just stand by what I said, which is what I said was, I'm taking half seasons. I mean, his Cy Young season is fantastic. It stands alone. Jake Arrieta's does. The period of that calendar year, not calendar year, but like half season, nobody in baseball has ever done anything like that. But here's the quote. Here's the tweet. When they said they were basically letting the Cubs know that there's going to be a sea of black and because the Pirates get to host it. And Jake says, whatever helps you keep your hope alive, just know. It doesn't matter. Balls. I love it. The balls.
So true. Well, with that, that is going to wrap things up on this edition of the Friendly Confines. Once again, our thanks to Michael Wilbon. Such a thrill. And Chad, spring training is here, buddy. Next week, we're going to talk about the Cubs actually playing some games and hitting the field. So that's going to be exciting.
Can't wait. Can't wait.
For Chad, I am Ryan. We'll talk to you next time, everybody. Have a good one.
See you at the ballpark, everybody.
Don't let anyone say that it's just a game, for I've seen other teams and it's never the same. When you're born in Chicago, you're blessed and you're healed the first time you walk into Wrigley.
I'm George Will, and you're listening to the Friendly Confines podcast with Chad and Ryan.
Hey, everyone. I'm Chad Gordon.
And I'm Ryan Lieber. We're the hosts of the Friendly Confines podcast.
Each week, we'll bring you the latest Cubs news from the fans' perspective with some of the biggest names in sports.
Joe Buck, welcome to the Friendly Confines with Chad and Ryan.
Yeah, oh my God. I'm happy to do it.
Pat Hughes, welcome to the seventh inning.
Happy to be here, Chad.
It is Len Kasper.
You got it, Ryan. Chad, happy to be with you guys.
The Hawk, Andre Dawson.
What a smart, distinct guy. I'm doing fine, thank you.
We're also excited to bring you new episodes as part of the Barroom Network.
So if you're a Cubs fan or even just a baseball fan,
be sure to check out the Friendly Confines podcast every week on the Barroom Network.
Everybody, this is Ryan Dempster, and you're listening to Chad and Ryan on the Friendly Confines podcast.